This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We're getting on the slops. It's all about beer. It is a festival of beer, if you will. Good Beer Week kicks off next week. And seriously, what you don't know about beer now, you will know by 2 o'clock. If you've got your questions, 0427 Joy949, 0427 569949. If your questions pertain to Carlton Draft, not interested. Yes, we are talking cravings, and I need to ask my co-host a very smart question, kicking off straight away. Her name is Jane Lewis. She is from Two Birds Brewing. Jane, is it rude to denigrate people's consumption of things like Carlton Draft?
I think, yeah, absolutely. Let people drink what they drink and enjoy it. It's, you know, can be a well-made beer. And can
if
be
you like
fun.
Carlton Draft or VB or all of those things, I bless you. Good on you. Welcome, Jane Lewis. It's been some time since you and I have sat down in this little room and had a bit of a yak.
Thanks, Pete. So nice to be here.
A little bit going on.
Yeah.
So since you were here, you've opened a space in Spotswood.
Yeah, so
very close to my house.
Yeah, we love the western suburbs. So we've got a little brewery and tasting room out in Spotswood. So we've got some food there as well, and people can come down, drink some brewery fresh beer, and
catch the train.
Yeah, totally.
Just near the station.
Yeah, 5 minutes walk from the station. So
perfect.
Yeah.
Have you moved your brewing operation entirely from Geelong to Melbourne, or?
So we actually put in our own brewery. So up until June last year, we were contract brewing all of our beer.
Right.
So someone else was making it for us. And then from June, we've taken over all of the keg manufacture.
Yep.
While we're still getting bottles made by a third party. Yep, contractor at this stage.
Outsourcing. Good work. Very good work. We need to welcome our other guest, one who was not so long ago with us. He is from St. Crispin. He's a very fine chef. He's a very nice man. He's very tall. His name is Joe Grabak. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Welcome.
How are you?
Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's been
Thank
a
you for
while.
Having me.
You're doing a couple of events as part of Melbourne Beer Week, and I want to talk about fine dining and food, fine dining and beer, because there's an interesting mix. And somebody who might be able to help us with fine dining and beer is Miro, who is the founder of Good Beer Week, who was a beer sommelier.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much for
Welcome.
Having me.
Welcome. Pleasure. What is a beer sommelier?
Well, I never had a qualification, but the job was pretty much writing
Most
tasting notes.
Don't.
No. Fake it till you make it. Training the team about beer styles, history, ingredients, service, and glassware.
And glassware.
Oh, it's crucial. I think with any drink, choosing the right glassware is crucial.
A great deal is going to be uncovered in this next hour. Talking about qualifications, you know that Tetsuya Okada, Christine Manfield, Neil Perry, none of those people are qualified.
Yeah, nice. Chefs. Okay, so
and they're some of the finest this country has produced, so I wouldn't be worried about that. How did Good Beer Week start? When did it start, and how did it all of a sudden explode to being so ridiculously big?
There's all sorts of streams of stories that come into to make one stream that is Good Beer Week. But origin story is basically a few of us were working at a place called Beer Deluxe in Federation Square.
Lovely.
And a Malton hop company distributor came along and asked us to support the Australian International Beer Awards, and we didn't really have much money for posters, let alone supporting an international beer awards. And we sort of laughed at it and then thought, oh, you know, but what if some of these guests that were coming over from overseas that have been so good to us, a few of us had been travelling through the States and people had taken us around to, oh, check out this venue and have this food over here and match it with this. And what if they came to Melbourne? There wouldn't be any way for them to find these venues or these breweries. So we started talking about a map or a program. Something kind of like the Comedy Festival, which has always been very inspirational to me. I think it's one of the best festivals in the world, Melbourne Comedy Festival. And so we wanted a program that you could fetishize, and then if you didn't get to every event, you kept it with you. And then you realized that actually down the road from me, I didn't realize Thomas Olive was a bar, or I didn't realize, you know, and then you find out about these things and you look over it and you pour over it till the next year, and then you go, what else can I do?
Jane, how important is the craft brewing industry to food and beverage more broadly?
Oh, it's incredibly important. I mean, there's so much good stuff going on in beer at the moment and has been for the last, you know, sort of 5 or 10 years. It's just expanding every year, and so many new players, so many good matches with food. It's just completely underrated, I think, in terms of a beverage. So there is not a food out there that, you know, someone like Miro couldn't find you an amazing pairing for. So,
Joe's sitting here nodding his head.
Definitely.
Is that true, Joe?
I can't agree more. You know, from our point of view as a restaurateur, you know, guests are looking for more interesting, you know, beverage matches. We don't call our wine match a wine match as such anymore. You know, it's a beverage match. We include things like cider. We include beers. We include, you know,
sake.
Sake, absolutely. You know, umeshu. We're doing a lovely ocean trout dish that we pair with an umeshu, a plum wine.
Love umeshu. That stuff
and is cocktails
English.
Too. You know, it's to be honest, it's, you know, it doesn't float everyone's boat. Some people do find it a bit, you know, for those more classically kind of orientated people.
That only want Pinot Noir with their duck.
Yes. You know, but on the whole, you know, people are really like consumers, you know, guests at the restaurant, they want to learn. They want to know more about, you know, their understanding of wine is, you know, pretty good. Now they want to learn more about beer and other, you know, beverages. So
a good dark ale with some chocolate pudding never goes astray.
Never, for sure. Nah.
We are going to momentarily talk more about some of the events for Good Beer Week, and I'm going to pick Jane's brains as well to find out whether craft beer is in fact the domain of the hipster. It is 13 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
14 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. A very robust discussion happening while those messages were going on. We are talking about Good Beer Week. My co-host, as I'm calling her today, is the very lovely Jane. She's from Two Birds Brewing, Jane Lewis. Miro is here as the founder and, I believe, festival director of Good Beer Week.
No. Co-founder. I look after education and hosting.
Right. So who's the festival director?
A man named James Smith, who also looks after the craftypint.com.
Oh, good on James. I didn't realise that. And I thought we should have a chef's perspective as well. So Joe Grabak is here from St. Crispin. Jane, I asked you about, is craft beer the domain of the hipster, and you giggled at me.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I mean, obviously they're... If you look at a lot of the distribution of where craft beer is being sold, you know, we see that, you know, there's a certain overlap between the hipster locations and the craft beer sales. So
it does really well in the northern suburbs.
That's pretty much what we're trying to say. Yeah, exactly. You know, and if you look around at the with us in this room, there's a lot of cool haircuts, and you know, there's a handful of beards, and
and I'm the little fat bloke in the corner. It's interesting because we do relate craft beer and to that hipster movement, which I think in itself is ridiculous, the hipster movement.
Yeah.
Because it used to be, I'm a hipster because I'm on the outside, and now every second person is sporting an Ed Kelly beard, skinny jeans and a flannelette shirt, and you just want to punch them in the face and say, hello, do you realise how much of a trend this is? Anywho, I won't get into that because we could be on that all day. Joe, did you want to say something to that?
Yeah, I was just going to add an affixie slung over the shoulder.
Oh, yeah, right. They're all riding to restaurants now.
Yeah.
I threw a grenade at you, Miro, during that little message break, and I'm going to lob the grenade across at you again. Where is the divide between craft beer and commercial beer, and is there a no man's land that exists, like they did in the war between the trenches, of something that has become too large to be craft and could be called commercial, but it's not big enough to compete with commercials like Cascade and Bogues and Foster's and Carlton? So there is a collective of, I'm sure, organisations that sit in the middle that may sit in that no man's land, and do the craft beer movement shun them, or do they include them?
There is niches and cliques within our community as businesses. To say that there's trenches suggests that there are hard lines. The word craft, well, you notice it's not called Craft Beer Week. We call it Good Beer Week. The word craft, I think, is defined in some other countries. A micro is definitely defined by tax, and boutique is a word that we can just chuck out the window. But
I haven't used boutique yet.
Yes.
No.
Good. No, I'll stick with craft.
But even with when it comes to craft, in, let's say, the States, who people say we're following some of the patterns of the growth of the States, Australian craft beer is apparently 3% of the overall market. And the States...
It seems very small.
It's tiny. It's
incredibly tiny, considering that there are 11 breweries in Australia in 1990 and just over 230 right now, most of which popped up in the last 5 years. So the rest of us fit into a thimble. The us. Not sure what that means, but us.
But they're not thems, yes.
Yes. And maybe that's the hard line we're talking about. Now, so what is craft beer if in the States they define it, but then they lift the volume on what the term craft beer means? Someone like Sierra Nevada, who granddaddies of they created the American style pale ale that we all, that Little Creatures is based upon, that many other breweries reference that recipe, and they're bottling 1,200 bottles a minute and 800 cans a minute.
I wouldn't define that as craft anymore, though, would you?
Well, they are the masters of the craft. They have, for the last 10 years, been 8 years zero waste. They haven't changed their recipes, and they've hit a certain volume. Above them, Sam Adams would be 7 times the size of them, and then Miller's is 200 times the size of that.
Craft doesn't have to be about size, right? I mean, craft's a mindset as much as anything else. Craft's about ingredients and thought and effort and recipes and all that kind of stuff. If these guys are still making the same beer that they've always been making, then simply because they're making a lot of it doesn't mean they're not craft.
And if I'd like to throw in here that perhaps a brewer is like a chef. And then at what point do you stop being a chef at the size of your restaurant?
You don't.
You become Pete Evans. bless, I do love Pete a lot.
So that's my way of not jumping into
and look,
the craft
you know what?
Debate.
That is a brilliant answer. Thank you. Because I didn't want to lob a grenade at you, and I know it's a difficult question to answer, but well done.
Some of the most talented brewers, you know, you can find amazingly talented brewers at Carlton. You know, a lot of people would say that there's no craft beer coming out of Abbotsford. I think Cooper's is about to be 5% of the overall beer market. I wouldn't ever say to any of the Coopers that they weren't craft brewers or aren't artisanal or that they didn't have great recipes or any of these things. They still make, they're still some of the brains trust of the Australian beer industry.
Do we spend too much time arguing about the semantics and not enjoying the beer?
Well, I think if I could dive in, because there's been a lot of clickbait media the last few months about what is craft and, you know, craft are snobs or I'd want to drink flavourless stuff. And I think although that Australia has had a massive growth around the volume of craft beer, we're still not talking about beer. We're still talking about who owns it, what size they are, all these other things that aren't actually beer. When are we going to start seeing more articles about, check out the flavours of this beer? I mean, Jane makes beers based around food cultures that match beautifully with what restaurateurs are doing in certain areas around Melbourne that really fits in with food culture. Mm. Where's the discussion of check out this flavour here, it fits in with that?
Jane, was that one of yours and Danielle's sort of prime motivators, is to make make beer that's going to replace wine and is good with food?
Totally, absolutely. I mean, food is something that I adore, so it's just kind of a natural flow-on that we like to make beer that goes well with food and also inspired by food. I mean, we've got beer that was inspired by Vietnamese cuisine, so it was called Rice Rice Baby, and it had ginger and lemongrass and Thai basil and everything like that. It was a lovely 4%, you know, zingy thing. We've got a beer called Taco, you know, corn, coriander leaf, lime peel, all that sort of stuff. Food inspires me no end, so just sort of it flows across into the beers that we make.
Joe, how much are you seeing this in the restaurants and in the restaurant game? The I guess it talks to artisan, which is a really good word you used before, but provenance. People are far more considerate of provenance, so where stuff comes from, its artisan value, rather than being mass-produced and perhaps, you know, genetically modified and all of those sorts of things. How important is the provenance to match what you do in the restaurant? Because we've been talking about provenance in restaurants for 10 or 15 years, local, seasonal, all of those other catchphrases. How important is what this movement is doing, and are they following the same sort of trajectory, if you will, as food?
Yes, I think it's extremely important. I think, you know, you only got to look at our beer list. We have, of 12, we have three that are within like a 6 kilometre radius of the restaurant door. So, you know, and I think the correlation between the two is that understanding, you know, like Jane was saying about, you know, understanding what food and where, you know, the things that we're doing at St. Crispin, you know, are very similar and along a similar line. So that, you know, again, that match between the two is extremely, you know, simple in a lot of ways. Like they're made for each other.
I guess it's almost all, and I'm going to come back to you on this, Jane, because the question is for you as well, a chicken and egg situation. So do you sit down, taste the beer and work out what food's going to go with it, or do you have an idea and then find something to match with it?
Depends. If you're, you know, like from a general menu point of view, you know, where I'm thinking about, you know, food first and foremost, the food always comes first, you know, seasonality, locality, those kind of things. But for special events like this, no, it's the beverage that takes first preference. So we'll get all the beers in, we'll have a taste, you know, sit down with the Somm, with Alan upstairs at Thomas Olive, you know, and we'll go through, this is what I think. We kind of develop a bit of a flow, you know, like heavy to light, or, you know, sometimes it's not. You know, we have done invert matches where the heaviest beer is at the start, you know, so I think that's quite interesting too, and that's something that is cropping up a lot more too, you know, and with traditional kind of wine matches too.
Jane, this makes you smile. You're sitting there smiling, listening to Joe's words, because it obviously matches your philosophy around the beer.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It makes me incredibly happy that, you know, someone like Joe is putting so much time, thought and effort into something like his beer list and his pairings, because I think, like I was sort of saying, it's so often the forgotten beverage to me. You know, you go into all these amazing restaurants and they have 6 beers on their beer list, and it's all, you know, sort of just different lagers. And they're just missing this, I guess, just a huge opportunity to have these amazing pairings and to really open people's minds about what beer is, what it can be, how it can taste, and how it can work with food.
And there are people who can't drink wine, quite literally, either distaste, don't like, can't handle it, or it has an effect on them where they can't drink it. So something at 5 or 6% as compared to a 14% or 13% wine in alcohol volume is probably something that's easy to manage with dinner than it is, you know, to have a big belting, you know, 15% alcohol red.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be a lot more, you know, sort of cleansing and refreshing, or then you can have something big and rich and smooth and silky and supple and all those kind of things. There's just so many different flavour combinations in beer. It's just this kind of whole world waiting for people who are kind of willing to step into it, I guess.
And if we step away from flavour and discuss texture, I think that's the next sort of academic level. You can talk about flavours and it's quite obvious, these differences, but the textures with matching are a huge part of it and often ignored.
Talk to me more about the texture.
Well, for example, cheese and wine. It's hard to find. I think it's hard to find good matches.
I agree.
When we're dealing with the carbonation of perhaps champagne, then it steps up a little bit. The same thing with many beers with a light carbonation or something a bit spritzy or crisp, but with like a soda water prickle at the back, then you can pick up that fat and it can play with it. I think the essence of food matching is about making something greater than the sum of its parts, and texture is a big part of that.
Ding, I want to have that gong in here. I'm going to give you a challenge. A scallop tortellini with shallot and cauliflower and a soy broth with Wagyu beef and earthy pine mushrooms. What beer are you matching with those two dishes?
Well, there's a couple of ways we could go there. The classic look is the 3 C's, cut, complement and contrast. We're talking about the earthy notes there.
I'm writing that down. Cut, complement,
and contrast. So we're looking at sort of earthy, salty sort of stuff there. We could go something that's going to cut through it, go something light like a Pilsner that's got a bit of carbonation to it, but like a grassiness or a citrus that might bring a balance to it that's not there. If you want to go a bit further rather than just cutting and then complement it, I might go towards a Saison where those citrus flavours get bolder and the carbonation gets bigger and fluffier, which will go really nicely. The spice and the citrus there might go really nicely with the seafood element. But then cut, complement, contrast. Well, I think we'll stick with either a Pilsner or a Saison for now on the...
Tell me a bit more about a Saison.
Saison is a Franco-Belgian style of beer that was traditionally... I think it's a lot of fun for brewers, the Saison, because every farmhouse made it differently, and it was traditionally how they paid farmhouse workers, but depending on which farmhouse...
In beer.
Part of your salary. Historically, beer has always been...
So why don't they pay apprentices in beer?
I think they do at some places, don't they?
I pay for much stuff in beer.
So the Saison is really highly carbonated style... and can be a bit dry and zesty and citrusy, all which I think are great elements with food. It's one of the almost cheetah beers that matches beautifully with so many different styles of food.
Traditionally quite nice and funky as well. Lots of really fun characters going on.
Were you happy with those choices with the dishes from your menu, which is what I read out, which is one of your events. We'll get to that particular event in a minute. We're going to grab Andrew Gow on the phone shortly. He's from Mornington Peninsula Brewery, a craft brewery that's not so far from us, and we'll talk to him about a couple of events, and we'll continue with Jane, Miro and Joe right here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It's 27 minutes past one.
We're listening to you. SMS 0427 Joy 949, email onair at joy.org.au, or call us 1300 Joy 949.
Or send a tweet to cravings_joy949. You'll catch us right in the studio. Jane Lewis is my co-host. She's helping me steer this beer bus. And I have to talk about that beer bus before the end of the program. Remind me, Prickly Moses. helping me steer this beer bus as we're talking Good Beer Week. Miro, pronounce your surname for me so I don't get it wrong.
Bellini.
Miro Bellini. So the things we drink for breakfast.
Yes.
Miro Bellini, who is the co-founder of the Good Beer Week, is also in the studio. Joe Grabak is here from St. Crispin. And on the phone is a man who's never been on the wireless before. So Jane, Miro and Joe, you must be kind. Andrew Gow is from Mornington Peninsula Brewery. Andrew, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete. Hi, Jane. Hi, others. Actually, I have been on the radio before a couple of times, Pete. Just wanted a little correction there.
Oh, well, somebody gave me some misinformation.
No, I've done a couple of little radio jaunts, so, yeah.
Excellent. Four events for you for Mornington Peninsula Brewery that you're involved with. Talk us through. One of them sold out, so let's not get too carried away with Tonka.
Okay.
Beer Deluxe, you're doing something. You've got, there's two that sold out.
Yeah. Well, that's on the Monday night as well. That's the Grandad Supper we're doing with 8 Wide, Road and Back in Brooklyn. So we're in very good company. So that's just a degustation dinner they're doing there on the Monday night. I think that... I'm not sure if that sold out. I think they've sold a lot of tickets. There might be a few still available.
The website will tell me. You keep going and I'll just look at the website and see what is in fact sold out.
And on the Tuesday, we're doing a collaboration down here at the brewery with 8 Wide, with Soren from 8 Wide, which we're currently working on a recipe and deciding what we're going to do. So I think there's still a few tickets available for that as well. So that should be a really good day. We open up the bar and have four 8 Wide beers on and four of ours. And Soren and I will both be here and have one of the other brewers brewing, and we'll... I'll be talking about the brewing process and all things beer.
Andrew, tell us how Mornington Peninsula came about.
We opened October 2010. It was a couple of mates who lived, were neighbours. Hawthorne had just won the grand final and they started drinking beer and talking about how great it'd be to open a brewery. So it took about 2 years to come to fruition, and so we're about 4.5 years into operation. We've opened a second brew house just around the corner from our original brew house about last August. So we've really upped production. It's probably about 80% of production at the new brew house. And the old brew house where the bar is probably cut back to about 20% of production, and that's mainly specialty beers.
Jane, are you familiar with the styles of beer that Mornington produce?
Yeah, they're producing some really great stuff. Hey, AJ, I was going to ask you how the cans are going for you.
Cans are going really well, Jane. We're So we've got a pale and IPA in cans, and we're currently looking at doing specialties in cans. Now, the problem with that is, as opposed to bottling, is obviously you have to get the cans pre-printed. But we're trying to work around that, and we're looking at a way of running cans through our labeler. So we'd actually be labeling the cans, which a few breweries in America are doing. We've actually got our hands on a couple. So we're down to the point where we probably think we're ready to go in the next 4 to 6 weeks, which means we'll be able to do short runs, so we can get short print runs of labels and put some of our specialties into cans, which is for me is pretty exciting. Just adds another kind of string to the bow of our brewery and kind of gets us more into that niche market, which is growing all the time.
Any of you can answer this question, the difference in taste from a can to a bottle. Miro?
Can I jump in on this?
Of course you can.
if you bought a $200 bottle of champagne and you drank it from the bottle, I would agree you're having a good night. I would not suggest that you're having the best experience of that bottle of champagne. So with cans and bottles, always pour it into a glass.
So you're a perfectly civilised answer. You're a gold star as well. You mentioned
It is a very civilised answer, but I mean, where the cans really come into play during those uncivilised times, Miro, at festivals, as you know, that's when the cans really come into play. I mean, of course, we like to pour them into a glass, but at festivals where you can't take glass in, they're perfect.
A great tinny
at Meredith.
And
camping, things like that.
Tinny at Meredith,
all the festivals that come on. So, yeah.
You mentioned IPA. For the uninitiated, I know what it is, but for those listening at home and playing at home, IPA is...
It's an India pale ale. So basically it's a hopped up version of a pale ale, usually more bitterness, more hop aroma and usually higher in alcohol as well.
Which is always a good thing.
Yeah,
what's the hard thing about making beer down there on the peninsula? There's got to be a challenge.
Oh, that's a good question.
I like the good questions.
Yeah, I know. It's a hard one to answer because it might sound really vain, but I don't think there's anything more difficult in making beer here on the peninsula than anywhere else in the world. I mean, we've got good water sources down here. Yeah, I don't think it's any harder here than what maybe, say, Jane would find it up in town.
And, you know, making beer is the best job in the world, right, AG?
Yeah, totally. Totally, Jane. Yeah, no, I think it's all, you know, as long as you've got your good resources, then I don't think making beer should be that hard.
Oh, that shouldn't have happened. Timely, but it shouldn't have happened. I fail as a radio presenter. That was my telephone. So no challenges. What's the greatest thing you've got down there that sets you apart, you think?
It's maybe our location. I mean, being regional, I mean, we're the only brewery within, I mean, probably the closest to us will be Red Hill, which is another, you know, 20-minute drive further down the peninsula. And then Higginbotham, which is a smaller brewery and a winery. So probably just the fact that we're the only ones around here. So we've got a very loyal core base of people, the regulars that come down, and then on weekends, especially during summer, we get an influx of a lot of tourists as well. Just while I'm on that, can I just mention one other thing we're doing during Good Beer Week, which I really do have to give a plug. Every year during Good Beer Week, we give our taps over to other breweries.
Yep.
So we keep, out of the 8 taps we have, we keep 3 or 4 ourselves and then rotate other breweries' beers through it, just so that we're giving mainly our locals an idea of what other craft breweries are doing.
Who are you working with?
Oh, so we've got 8. Obviously, we're going to have 8 wide beers on, but then we're going to have Moo Brew, Holgate, Modus Operandi, Green Beacon, Fortitude and Feral on during that week. So just to give a few of the locals the idea that there is craft beer outside of Mornington Peninsula Brewery.
I think that's...
just kind of sit here and drink our beer all day and don't recognise this other fantastic...
It's generous of you. Is that where you're going, Miro?
Yeah, and it's. I think it's very that collegiate thing that we love about craft breweries. You know, we were saying before, as indefinable. I think that sort of... like a high tide raises all boats, and by putting on all these other amazing breweries, I mean that lineup that you just mentioned there, that's world class. And then to bring your taps over to those beers, so that your local markets, you know, the community that makes your brewery, not only A, get a perspective of what's going on around the world, but B, then appreciate why you're different, and that really sums up to me a beautiful facet of what craft beer is.
Yeah, there's a little bit of selfishness involved. It's actually bringing other craft beers to us or to me and our fellow workers, so we don't have to go up to town to drink them as well.
There's got to be a self-serving purpose. Joe, we're actually seeing this also with food. So chefs are combining to deliver something that's interesting and unique and that can't be done on a day-to-day basis in your own restaurants. Mm-hmm. The industry, I think, both the food and booze, is quite altruistic. Would you agree?
Yes. Collaborations are so important. Mm. You know, they can stem from... you know, neighbours, they can stem from past, you know, employees. We flew up to Sydney about a month ago and did a dinner with a mate of mine who I spent, you know, 4 years at the Square restaurant in London. But, yeah, we
who
did
was it.
Jeremy Bentley?
Yep.
Yeah, at the Devonshire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but those, you know, those collaborations are really, really important. You know, it gives you a different insight. You know, it gives your guests... You know, his guests at the Devonshire, we probably may never experience St. Crispin, but we went up there, you know, and it led, you know, to that kind of dinner. And, yeah, the same thing with this, you know, with being able to experience different beers. You know, it gives it that individuality.
It does. And I think, Andrew, and Miro's going to back me up on this, I'm sure, having regional Victorian brewers as part of a festival, it doesn't become just about those city folk. It is a statewide festival. There's stuff happening in all corners, and I'm sure if we talked about Beechworth and Kyneton and Mildura
and
Woodend, you know, I'm imagining that there are brewers on every sort of corner of the state that are going to tap into this festival. Andrew, thank you for your time. If you want to give your website so people can have a look at what's on, not just for Good Beer Week, but normally...
Okay, so we're open from Thursday, Friday from 3 o'clock and Saturday and Sunday from midday. We have live music on Sundays. We usually have about six different beers on tap, three regulars, and try to have three specialties on as well of our own beers. And our website is mpbrew.com.au.
Fantastic, mate. Thank you for joining us. Have good fun through Good Beer Week, and we'll catch up with you again another time when we can have a bit more time to talk more about the business.
Good on you. Thanks very much.
Good stuff. Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Gow, he is from Mornington Peninsula Brewery. Jane, you're a bit of a fan.
Oh, AJ and I used to work together. So,
oh, did you?
Yeah.
Where did you work?
At Mountain Goat Brewery.
Ah.
Yes.
Is it a really small sort of incestuous world, like kitchens and hospitality? You talk about the Square. I was talking to someone 2 days ago who worked at the Square. Is it an incestuous little industry?
I like
completely.
Yeah, yeah.
You probably know, like to think of another term.
Incestuous in a good way, you know. To me,
not in a creepy way.
Yeah, not in a creepy way at all. No, very much in a family kind of a way.
Yes,
you know, like
yes.
I feel like I have, you know, all of this extended family. Some of my beer mates are some of my closest friends, and it's just full of really good people.
And you look after one another. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that simple.
Yeah.
You know, if you've run out of something or you need a delivery or whatever, I'm sure you're going to call on your mates in the industry rather than ringing up your third cousin who you know lives nearby.
Yeah, exactly. So, I just returned some hops this week from somebody that I'd borrowed them from last week when I had realised that I just had shortchanged myself. And yeah, no, it's wonderful like that. It's so great.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. Joy.
Hi, this is Dan Churchill from MasterChef. You're listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Jane Lewis is my co-host today. We've got Joe Grabak and Miro Bellini in the studio. We are talking about Good Beer Week. Joe, I want to get to your events because I want to know how you put these together. You talked about... Sorry, I'm still getting over that song. You talked about you know, beer first and how you match it. You love foraging for mushrooms and stuff. Was that part of your process? So knowing... finding a beer that you could do that foraging experience with?
What, as in forage with a can?
Well, I don't see why not, but sort of the, you know, wanting to bring, because I know that you love to forage, so was that part of the process when you were looking at the beers thinking I could go and get some Slippery Jacks or I could pull out some seagrass or something? Or is that more Ben Shuri?
That's definitely more Ben Shuri. Probably more the opposite, you know, I think. It was kind of... like, especially, you know, like one of the events we're doing with Three Ravens and the Mash Brewery. So, you know, it was about getting those beers in and tasting them. And then, you know, it always does come back to seasonality. And there is, you know, that, especially now, it's like, you know, I'll be doing it tomorrow morning, even though my wife will probably be quite upset with me. But
I love foraging. The fact that Three Ravens and a Mash are doing How to Drink a Mockingbird.
Yep. Yep.
My favourite book.
Yep.
Beer.
Yep.
Your food. There is nothing that can go wrong with this
no,
event,
no.
I'm
not
sure.
Not at all. No.
So that's on the 20th of May.
Yep.
How many courses?
So we're doing a 5-course.
Right.
Match with... You know, three of the Ravens and three of the Mash Brewers. We are going to be reading from the book
a Excellent. Little bit.
Well, not myself personally, because I'll be in the kitchen cooking.
I always wanted to have a dog called Atticus. Mm. But then friends of mine had a child called Atticus. Mm. I went, no, they just can't call the dog that now. People might get upset. Cured kingfish, vanilla mayonnaise, malted oil and nasturtium. How does that collective of ingredients come together?
You know, in that IPA, you know, I do get a lot of vanilla in there. You know, it's something that we've done before. Kingfish lend itself phenomenal tool to tea and vanilla curing. So sugar, salt, you know, vanilla kind of pods, a little bit of black tea in there, and some wakami as well, just to give that really, really.
So which beer is that with that?
With
hang on, before you tell her,
oh, no.
What would you put with it?
Yeah. Well, so, I had obviously just said IPA, so cheating.
Damn. what's a Berliner Weiss?
I can jump in on that.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Any of you dead air for a second?
Yeah, sorry. The Berliner Weiss is the famous quote goes with that is that Napoleon's troops referred to it as the champagne of the north. So up in Berlin, they had a wheat beer or Weiss beer that had an acidity, sharpness, and soft alcohol content. It is, a sour beer or tart, which, again, acidity, I think, usually...
And we do like a tart. Right.
Especially for dinner.
Yeah.
Usually goes quite nicely with food, where carbonation and acidity can cut through things.
So is that part of your CCC process?
It's definitely...
See, I'm your three Cs. I'm throwing it back at you.
Yeah.
I told you I'd read it down.
It's a style that's not very popular by volume, but in a dinner, usually is very welcome.
I did want to also talk about... I keep mentioning this bus. And the reason I want to talk about the bus is because these guys from Otway Estate, which is a winery, also make beer, Prickly Moses. And they have something called a spotted ale. And 100% of the profits of the spotted ale go towards endangered spotted tiger quolls in the Otway Forest. So all their profit for this particular beer, which is on the bus, goes to saving this endangered native species, which I think is absolutely brilliant and talks a lot to the way that craft brewers think. But I saw this bus last weekend. It's a very large bus. It's an old Firefly two-story human transport bus. The bottom part of the bus is a working brewery, and the top part of the bus is a VIP lounge that seats 25 people with surround sound music, flat screen, and a little six-tap bar at the end. I thought I had died and gone to heaven, and I'm obsessed by this Prickly Moses bus. Jane, you know it.
It is the most incredibly pimped-out bus I have ever come across. I was mind-blown when I saw it. I was just like, how? I can't even understand. But, yeah, it's pretty cool.
And they've got half a dozen taps that sit out on the side as well, so people can drink outside as well as in the bus. I just thought it was absolutely bloody marvellous. Have you seen it, Miriam?
No. I'm having fun just imagining it, though.
Yeah, so it's black because they're all of their
branding
is black and white. So it's this big black shiny bus with all the white sort of Prickly Moses stuff all over it. It is super cool. I'll show some photos when we get off air because it was just the craziest thing I've ever seen. And the guy is now going to fit. It's not aircon, so he's going to fit it out with air conditioning and drive it to Darwin.
Yeah, right.
And bring Prickly Moses to the good folk of the Northern Territory. I think that is just priceless.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's a brilliant party bus as well, I'd reckon.
I can imagine.
So it's a transport coach, like a Greyhound bus. Two-story. Yeah. It's just remarkable. And that spotted ale. Have you tried that spotted ale?
No, I haven't actually.
So it's to save the quolls. How cool is that?
That's a good, excellent thing to be supporting for sure.
So because they're in the Otways and there's these quolls live there and they're endangered, so...
Yeah. Good on them.
They make some very good beer. They almost also make cider. Is there a division between beer and cider?
Oh, they're two very different things.
Yes, they are.
Yes. I think... maybe I don't know. I like to be diplomatic when I talk about other alcohols. I think that the growth of cider has very big differences to the growth of wine and beer and the Australian spirits industry as well. But there is some amazing cider out there. But in my time as a barman, I rarely get cider drinkers that care about whether or not it's a concentrate or an actual fruit.
Concentrate is horrible.
Well, I think it was CUB that planned or projected 400% growth across all their ciders the year the alcohol pops tax came in and then smashed all those targets. So I think the big part of that growth hasn't been about the same growth we're seeing in many other gourmet industries. I think it's in many cases, it's another sugary option. But then again, there are some amazing producers. I mean, the guys Punt Road, the Napoleon & Co. It's finished with
John
a champagne
Baxter.
Yeast.
And the Kelly Brothers stuff as well.
Brilliant. Yep. Brilliant.
And again, Cold Stream apples. Mm-hmm. That much I do know. Yep. Mm-hmm. Rather than concentrate. Because that concentrate, I think cider is just a drink to get pissed on. I don't know that it's got the finesse of beer and wine and champagne, and that's my opinion, and I'll keep that, and you don't have to answer it. I have a comment. I'll take this as a comment. I sound like Tony Jones. Ooh, foraging. Do you know of any local group or any group I can join for this activity? I've always had an interest in mushrooms. That's from Anne Louise.
Definitely. Probably the Peninsula is definitely the hotspot for organised forage tours. My biggest, please listen, listeners, if you don't know what you're picking, please don't pick it and eat it. There's been lots of it happens every autumn.
You'll either get really whacked or really sick.
Yeah. People do go out and they do get really, really sick and die. So please don't do it. But there are organised tours that happen around the peninsula. There's Muriduck Winery is one that springs into my head.
I also think there's Central Victoria somewhere.
Yep.
Up and in and around Daylesford, sort of Daylesford, Heathcote. Yep. Space somewhere. I'm pretty sure there's a foraging, organised foraging event up there.
So I know, you know, without a doubt there is the ones that happen down the peninsula. You know, big, like, picking kind of areas are around the Red Hill. You know, without a doubt you go down there on a weekend and you see, you know, people, cars stop by the side of the road. You know, some
so
guy
who,
with
who
a bucket.
Who do you find? Is there someone you can find?
Look, I've done it now for probably 12 years roughly, and look, to be honest, it was trial and error at the start, and you know, every time I go out now I still see mushrooms that I've never seen before. I don't touch them, you know. I do have a look at them sometimes. I take samples back with me, but on the whole,
and have those late at night after finished work
with a
craft beer that you've got in Mornington.
Yes,
while you've been down
exactly.
It's 5 minutes to 2. You're on Joy 94.9. We shall return and go to our shameless plug section of the program. You're on Cravings here, where it is currently 5 minutes to 2.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB TIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
G'day, I'm Pete Evans, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Oh, thanks, Paleo Pete. It is 3 minutes to 2, time for some shameless plugging. We'll start with you, Joe. Two events happening for Good Beer Week at St. Crispin. They are on the 20th of May. There is the Three Ravens and Mash Brewing Unite to host To Drink a Mockingbird.
Yep, that's a 7 o'clock start.
7 o'clock. And the other one that is on the 30th of May.
Well, that one's an ongoing one. So what we're going to do for that over the course of that week is just do beer-inspired cocktails. Alan Mulverhill, he's going to look after some weird and wonderful concoctions.
Sounds awesome. stcrispin.com.au.
Certainly. Check it all out. It's all on the website.
Excellent. Miro, the website?
Goodbeerweek.com.au. You should find anything and everything that you could ever imagine would be fun to
How
do.
Many events? Can you remember off the top of your head?
Yeah, there's 250 events across 180 venues over 9 days.
Insane. Jane?
Yes.
Two Birds.
Twobirdsbrewing.com.au. We've got an Iron Chef event actually on the May the 20th, which is a we're using rhubarb as our key ingredient, and Casey from Rockwell and Sons is making a dish and I'm making a beer, so...
Excellent.
Yes. Wow.
That'll be very good fun. And your venue in Spotswood?
Yeah, so come down, have a beer with us.
What Hall Street?
136 Hall Street in Beautiful. Spotswood.
Excellent. Time for my own shameless plugs. I will be bringing you our sixth birthday celebration show next week, 2 hours from midday until 2 o'clock. Live from the Noosa Food and Wine Festival. I have a list of about 20 chefs that I'm catching up with when we're up there. So I will bring the program live midday until 2 next Saturday right here on Joy 94.9. It will be a big day, so I'm quite looking forward to that. Also, new magazine launches Monday, 3 p.m. The password will be taken off. It's scoffermagazine.com, S-C-O-F-F-E-R magazine.com. Have a look at that. It's about food reviews and restaurants and wine reviews and beer and produce and events and all sorts of stuff. So scoffermagazine.com, you can look at that on Monday at 3 o'clock and it will be updated every Monday at 3 o'clock. So the news that doesn't make Epicure will... Mm-hmm. Hopefully,
sounds
end
good.
Up in ours. It's been a pleasure to have you, Jane. Thank you for coming and helping me steer the bus.
Thank you so much, Pete.
Thank you, Miro. Lovely to meet you and see somebody so passionate about what they do.
Oh, thank
You've
you so much.
You've clearly found where you should be. And Joe, always good to see you.
Same. Now let's go find the bus, shall
yeah,
we?
Nice. Yeah, let's go and find that Prickly Moses bus. Joe will be with you in just a second, bringing you Escape Pod, our wonderful travel program. So that's coming up in just 5 seconds from now. I've been Pete Dillon. This has been Cravings. You're on Joy 94.9. Have a very, very pleasant afternoon.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.